It's like mom and raiding season. We're lucky to have mothers who fight. Our fathers must stay home and protect their people.
Dad fights when they hit the village.
Tom was a stickler for fact.
Papa fights if he can.
Roald tried to smile and failed.
Poor things,
Dane thought.
They miss their folks, coming and going all the time. At least while Ma and Granda were alive, they were there.
How about a run to the beach? The seals aren't that far out. If we ask nice, maybe they'll come in.
Maybe I should wait,
replied the red-headed boy.
I'll have Gimpy keep watch.
Usually the bloodhound's name made Tom smile, but not now.
He'll fetch us if they saddle Dark Moon.
I'm not a baby. I won't cry or anything. It's just I keep having bad dreams anymore.
Tom looked down, biting his lip.
Let's go look at the seals.
Gimpy was coming for them when the lioness and Dark Moon passed him on the slope to the beach. The minute she stopped, they knew it was serious. She wore full mail. A company of the Swoop's guards waited by the gate, wearing combat gear. One of them carried a banner, crimson silk with a gold lioness rampant, the personal flag of the king's champion. The knight slid from the saddle, hanging shield and sword from the pommel, before kneeling to embrace her son. Tom fought tears.
You know Fief Mandash?
She spoke to all three. Roald and Callie liked her and didn't look any happier than her son.
They've got ogres, three of them. They killed the lord and his son and have the rest of the family trapped in the keep. I have to go. We're the closest king's representatives.
Tom swallowed.
Ma, ogres are huge.
Not huge. Huge. The messenger says the male is 8 feet or so. That's not bad. And he's the biggest.
Alana smiled, but her eyes spoke of worry and watchfulness.
I'm taking some men, all right?
That seemed to reassure the children.
Tom, mind your father and Maud, and don't get under people's feet. A hug and a kiss.
She took them.
And you be good.
She tousled his hair and shook hands with Roald and Callie.
Tell your seal guests good night. You need to clean up before supper.
All of them went to obey. The knight watched them pat the seals, pulling on an amethyst-stitched glove.
Should I go with you, lioness, if it's immortals?
No, with 20 men I should be fine. What gets me angry is I told Mandash to arm his people if he was too cheap to hire soldiers. But no, we can't teach peasants to use weapons. What if they decide they don't like their overlords?
She sighed.
I shouldn't speak ill of the dead. I just don't like the timing, and I don't like it being immortals.
She took one of Dane's hands in both of hers. Her grip was powerful.
Will you and Numair look after my family? Don't let anything happen to them.
Chills crept up the girl's spine.
We won't, lioness.
Alana smiled.
Thank you.
She drew a deep breath and went to bid goodbye to the children once more. The lioness had been gone for 2 days. Dane had collapsed early into her loft bed, worn out from her evening's lessons. She dreamed. It was a pleasant night in her badger set. With her belly full, she listened to the kits play. She was about to go for a cool drink of water when her dreams changed. Trees and a moonlit sky tumbled around her. Boats filled with men came onto the beaches, and men crept among the trees. Speaking softly and fast, they lit fires, scorching the roosts and blinding her. Into flight she tumbled, over the roaring cold and salty place, with panic in her throat. There was the light ahead, the one the forest bats had sung about, a beacon of safety. She was the greatest of the people. She could protect them when strange men broke the night rituals. Dane gasped and sat up.
Odds bobs, what was that about?
With her excellent night vision and the light of the full moon that came in the windows under the eaves, she saw that the rafters overhead were thick with bats. A good 30 of them, mixed breeds, watched her with nervous eyes. 3 were hoary bats, named for the frost on their brown fur. By themselves, they would not have been a surprise. They weren't sociable bats, not like the clusters of big and little brown bats that hung with them, or the handful of pipistrelles.
Wing friends, what's amiss? Come and tell me.
Within seconds, she was a bat tree, with little bodies festooned on her curls and parts of her nightshirt. All of them trembled in terror.
Hush!
Closing her eyes, she thought of deep and even breaths, of safety in caves, of the drip and echo of water in high chambers. Slowly the bats took her calm into themselves. Small talons changed their grip, this time so flesh was not caught along with the cloth. The trembling eased and became a thin vibration. Some of the bolder ones returned to the rafters to give her air. She sent the calm out with them, enticing more of those who clung to her to take the perches they were used to, hanging from wood. The ones left were the hoary bats and the leaders of each group. Dane opened her eyes.
Now, let's hear it, one at a time.
It was all she could do to stay calm when they described what they had seen. It was her dream. Men, strangers, coming from the woods and from boats on the water, hiding under the trees. She had to clamp down on her witnesses a little to make sure of the numbers they were describing. Bats tended to count by the way they roosted. Their idea of numbers was flexible and depended on the breed of bat. Dane knew she couldn't tell the Baron or the Riders her friends had seen 6 quarter colonies, or whatever the total was. Not only would that not be helpful, but they would think she was crazy. To the hoary bats who roosted alone, the men had arrived in flocks, like deer they saw grazing at night. Moreover, each bat had come from a different part of the wood that ran along the coast. After scribbling with a stick of charcoal on her drawing pad and squinting to read her own marks, she concluded that each hoary bat had seen nearly 50 men. The big brown bats had seen at least 2 colonies, 60 men or so. Most of the pipistrelles were from one place and had seen less than half of one of their colonies, almost 50. One lone pipistrelle from the wood north of the swoop identified another half colony. The little brown bats had come from the east and south. Each of their sightings came to 2/10 colonies. For them, that meant 200 men all told. All the bats assured her their counts had not overlapped, and that she took as truth. Their concepts of numbers might be odd, but a bat's knowledge of territory was precise to a pin. Dane looked at the numbers, her skin tingling in shock. If the bats were right, they had seen more than 500 strange men coming overland or by sea and landing near the cove. The bats were more familiar with the locals than those humans might have believed possible. The little animals insisted the strangers were not their humans. Moreover, the strangers all wore metal over some parts of their bodies, and all carried or wore wood tipped with metal and bars of metal. Dane could see their faces in the bats' minds. They were the hard faces of warriors. Carefully, without frightening the animals, she eased into her breeches and boots. In the process, she talked 2 of the hoary bats into staying behind. The others, the head of each colony, the lone pipistrelle, and 1 particularly scared hoary, clung to her nightshirt and hair. They would go with her, they said. Sarge, who ran the trainees on night watch, and Callie sat in front of the stable, talking. From the look of things, the princess had been unable to sleep.
"Dane?"
Sarge asked when she emerged. The girl's blue eyes widened. Abruptly, Dane saw herself as they, as humans, must see her. Small, wriggling animals swarming on her, clinging to hair and clothes. They tried their best to be clean, but a couple of them had lost control of their bowels.
"I must look like a monster."
Dane swallowed a lump in her throat. She hadn't realized how much Callie's opinion, or Sarge's, had come to mean to her.
"I have to talk to the Baron,"
she whispered without looking at them. Callie walked over hesitantly. She stopped, then reached out to touch a furry body. The little brown bat transferred his affections to her in a leap. She squeaked, then let him snuggle into her collar.
"He smells you on me."
Her tiny smile trembled and held. Sarge got up, his brown eyes kind.
"Come on, girls."
The master of the swoop was in his study. The queen and Josua, the captain of the swoop's guards, were there as well, seated in comfortable chairs, while Numair stared out one of the windows.
"What's all this?"
George asked. His sharp eyes took in Dane's riders, as well as Callie's small hanger-on. Thayet yelped when she saw Dane. Josua was on his feet, dagger half-drawn. Numair looked around, frowning.
"Please, don't startle them."
The bats caught the surge of her own fears. She made herself take a deep breath and get under control.
"Don't open your eyes,"
she cautioned the bats. The room was cozily lit from a human standpoint, but not from theirs.
"They won't hurt anyone."
"It's only bats, Mama."
Sarge's mouth twitched. It was impossible to tell that Callie herself had been upset by them only a few minutes ago. Thayet and Josua stared at Dane.
"It's important, sir,"
she told the Baron.
"I wouldn't have brought them if it wasn't."
"May I?"
Numair asked, pointing to the hoary bat. The animal's nose was already questing, having located interesting smells on the sorcerer's clothes. Gently, Dane handed him over. In one of Numair's gigantic palms, the bat was dwarfed.
"What news have your friends brought for me?"
George asked. Dane looked at his face, but saw no trace of mockery or disbelief.
"Either he's the world's finest player, or he believes in me. Have you a map?"
He gestured behind her. She turned and saw a table covered with sheets of parchment. On top was a map of Pirate Swoop. Holding down a corner of it was a box of small colored pebbles. Consulting with her friends, she put one at each location where strangers had been seen, explaining to the adults as she worked.
"All this since twilight,"
she said when she finished.
"We think it's more than 500 all told."
She looked at the picture she'd made and blanched. The stones formed a half-circle a mile away from the castle and village of Pirate Swoop. They had been surrounded in the dark. Nine. Siege. Things moved so fast Dane's head spun. Pirate Swoop was more than prepared for night attacks. Within minutes, Captain Josua, Thayet, and Sarge had left to quietly wake the village and bring the people back to the castle. With them, they took Dane's promise the livestock would move quietly. Once she had explained things to them, the village animals were eager to help. She felt ashamed of herself for showing them images of the raiders' imaginary stewpots in such gruesome detail, but told herself the cause was a good one. Even the geese and chickens had been willing to go along after that. Next, she asked the bats to return to their friends in her stable.
You won't like the people I'm going to talk to now,
she assured them, and they believed her. George had asked her for spies who would spook less easily than the bats, and that meant only one thing: owls. Dane had to admit owls were unnerving to deal with, and she liked them. The bats did not. While they weren't natural enemies, there was always a chance an owl could make a mistake, and apologies meant nothing to a dead bat. With the bats gone, she went to the limits of her range, contacting owls and explaining her problem. She wasn't surprised to find that the silent predators were already angry about the invasion. The strangers had chased all the game worth hunting into burrows in earth and tree. Waiting for the owl's report, she and Numair went to the observation deck. From there, they watched as the swoop's gates quietly opened and guards and riders headed for the village to help the people pack and move. Dane noted with approval that the hooves of all the horses and ponies were muffled. With the moon full and the night clear, they didn't need torches. A small blessing, since the invaders also had used moonlight to keep their arrival secret. The owls reported, and Dane wrote their information on her paper. When they finished, she added the total with fingers that shook. She checked her numbers and came up with the same total. A third check for the same result. Her voice emerged as a squeak.
Lord Baron?
He had come while she was working.
I have the whole thing.
He raised his eyebrows.
So soon?
Owls are fast.
She pointed out the total. A little more than 600 men had infiltrated the woods.
The owls say they aren't moving. They're camped. No fires, but they've settled.
Waiting for dawn. Waiting for that.
He nodded at the sea. 2 miles out, a fog bank lay on the ocean, its top as high as the tower on which they stood. It took her a minute of looking before she saw what was wrong. The curved dome was clean, as if the thing were shaped by a sculptor. It was also dead on the water. Fog was neither tidy nor slow. It moved fast and overwhelmed everything in its way. This close, she should not have been able to see the sky, and she ought to have seen it move by now.
Numair?
The sorcerer was leaning on the wall, his eyes closed. A transparent black cloud surrounded him. Bits of light flickered in it like fireflies. He shook his head.
It's opaque. I can't even feel the weatherworking spells that are holding it in place, and there have to be spells. Fog is defined by natural law like any atmospheric creation. In the absence of those laws, we have to assume magic, which I should be able to detect. Since I can't detect it, that argues the presence of dampening spells in the fog.
Dampening spells?
George's face was tight.
We're boxed in, then, like rats in a trap. Whatever's in that fog will hit us in the morning, sure as the crooked god cheats. Why'd we have no idea this was coming?
The mage looked at his friend.
George, there are more illusion spells and diffusion spells than there are stars. Scrying is an inexact magic. I have to know what to look for. All right, I'm good, but even I can be overwhelmed or outflanked. Alana and John would tell you the same thing.
George put a hand on Numair's shoulder.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean you failed at your job. It's just been a long time since I've been sucker-punched. I don't like it.
His face had taken on harsh new lines.
They'll crush us between what's out there and those 600 at our backs.
And the army won't come before we're bruised, at least.
Aye.
How many warriors here?
80, not counting the riders.
George drew a deep breath and looked at Dane.
What can your friends do to help?
She swallowed.
Don't ask me to make them fight. They're not... This isn't about them. I can't ask them to fight and die for humans.
Shivering, the girl remembered the marsh and the slaughtered birds.
Please say you understand.
George's silence drew out for a long moment, and it was impossible to read what was in his face. At last he smiled and patted her arm.
I don't entirely, but then I'm all too human. Will you ask them to watch, then? To let us know if more soldiers come, or if the ones out there start to move.
She nodded and whispered,
Thanks.
Sending out her request, Dane settled to wait for her friend's reports from the woods. As she listened, guards and riders began to return with the villagers. Never before had an evacuation gone so well. The livestock had been waiting for their owners to come out. There were no problems with catching animals, not even chickens. The trainees, at least, had a good idea of why this was so. The villagers did not, and fled to the castle as if their own animals had turned to ghosts. Dawn. The first raiders came into sight to find the village empty and the castle gates closed. The battlements were lined with warriors who did not look surprised in the least to see raiders outside their walls. When the sun rose above the horizon, fog rolled over Pirate's Swoop. A gentle hand was shaking her, and a wet tongue was bathing her face. Dane looked up and saw Onua, Callison, and Tahoy.
I'm sorry. I must have gone to sleep.
She turned scarlet with embarrassment and tried to get up. Her knees buckled.
Goddess, how long have I been here?
Onua caught her on one side, Callie on the other.
Since the middle of the night. The Baron says we owe the warning to you and your friends.
Thank my friends. I just passed the word on.
She massaged the cramps from her legs. Callie gave her a roll stuffed with fruit and held a jug full of juice to go with it. Dane was still hungry when she finished.
What's going on now?
She asked, accepting a sausage roll from her young friend.
We're in trouble. This,
Onua's wave took in the fog surrounding them,
isn't just fog. It carries dampening spells for the gift. Plenty of them. We're not sure how many sorcerers are out there holding it, but there have to be a lot of them. Whoever engineered this planned for everything.
Dane looked at the two humans.
That hurts you both, right? You're both gifted.
Onua nodded.
Lucky for us, there's no need for magic just yet. Numair got word out to the palace and to the king before the fog came in.
Dane looked at the woman, wondering if the mage had found anyone nearby who could help. Reading her, Onua shook her head.
I'd best put on clean clothes then, and get my bow.
She caught an angry call from below.
And let Cloud know I'm alive. She's upset with me.
Can I go with her?
Asked Callie. Onua smiled.
Of course. Just make sure you stay with Dane. If you run into your brother, have him report to me.
Dane glanced around to see who was there, and saw the Queen, Numair, and the Baron, with trainees and guardsmen armed and keeping watch.
Where should I report to?
Here. Take your time. Nothing can happen as long as this mess hangs over us.
She nodded.
Let's go, Callie. I need to clean up.
Roald and Tom were waiting for Dane in her loft. She shooed them downstairs while she changed, combed her hair, got her weapons, and comforted the frightened bats. In the stable below, she soothed the ponies, all of whom knew something bad was going on. She was uneasy herself. She'd been fogged in before at the swoop, but it wasn't the same. The mist felt dirty, and the hackles were up on the back of her neck. The two boys, both gifted, were in worse condition than Onua and Callie, and clung to Dane's hands as she walked them back to the inner court. On her trip down, she hadn't looked at the new arrangements. Now she did. Long tents were set up for healers. Water barrels were stacked everywhere. Temporary corrals held the village animals. Seeing them, Dane went to thank them, assure them they were safe, and reinforce the need for their good behavior. It was the first time anyone had explained that raider attacks were the reason why they were so often dragged up to the castle without warning. Understanding that, they were more than eager to help.
Honestly, you'd think people would have told them before now and saved everyone trouble. Speaking of people, where's their masters?
Some are on the wall,
Tom said. Looking up, Dane saw villagers armed with bows, shields, and metal caps among the guards and riders.
The rest are in the lower levels. We're dug into the rock. There's plenty of room down below.
She was startled. She'd never dreamed there might be more to the castle than what she saw.
How many more surprises does your Da have up his sleeve?
Tom grinned.
A lot.
Sarge waved to her from the wall. She waved back, hoping her face didn't reveal her thoughts. She had human friends here, too. Friends who might be hurt or die. With Ma and Granda gone, she'd thought she was free of that kind of pain. But she was less free than ever. She'd never love anyone as she had her family, but others had come to be important to her. Evan and Miri, who gave her acceptance. Onua, an elder sister. The Rider officers, respect for her judgment. Each of those people now was a potential wound. Thinking grim thoughts, she climbed the outside stair to the deck, the children following her.
I should have stayed wild,
she told herself.
I never should have got back up on my hind legs. Never?
Another part of her asked.
Never means not meeting sea lions and griffins. Never means not hearing whales sing. Never means not learning how to heal.
She sighed. On deck once more, she saw two guards and two trainees, Elnor and Padrak, on duty with bows strung and ready. The Queen and Onua were armed as well. Bori, like Sarge, was elsewhere on the walls, keeping an eye on the other trainees. Baron George was talking quietly to one of the guards. Thiet smiled at her and crooked a finger at her son and daughter.
Come talk to me,
she ordered, and they obeyed. Tom went to stand with his father, and Dane sought out Numair.
Are you all right?
He looked tired and strained. His mouth was tight, as if he were afraid he might say too much if he opened it. He barely managed a smile for her.
I'm scared.
She looked up at him.
I'm the only one who understands. If the lioness were here, he'd have said it to her, but she's not, and I am. There's magic in the air, lots of it, and everyone looks to him for a miracle. Right now, he can't even tell if his magic is the right kind, and he's afraid.
She put her hand in his, and he squeezed it tight.
I hate to theorize without information, but I need a working plan. As it is, I either hold the spells off the swoop so the others can function, or I leave the dampeners on them and punch through myself to fight with what I have. The problem is that as a warrior mage, my talents are limited, and I have no healing magic at all. If Alana were here, we could work off each other, but...
His face tightened again.
That's it, then,
she said, trying to think aloud as he did.
They lured the lioness off and put an army between her and us just for that.
He nodded.
Which means they've been watching us all along.
Dane and Numair both jumped when George spoke behind them.
They know we've the queen here, and the next two in line for the throne.
Dane and Numair looked at each other and chorused,
The Stormwings!
That's why they were spying out the seacoast. They were waiting for us to arrive and get settled. I'll bet they also made sure none of our army or navy was close enough to help.
Something occurred to him, and his eyes lit.
Dane, your magic. How is it?
She was surprised he even asked.
It's the same as ever. You told me yourself I couldn't turn it off.
Wild magic. It's in everything. No matter how many dampeners they lay on us, you'll be able to function.
Something tugged at the back of her eyes, something ugly and sour.
I can't send my friends to die,
she warned, but already her attention had shifted.
Bows!
She yelled, getting hers off her back and putting an arrow to the string.
Bows! Stormwing in the air!
George shoved Tom down between the wall and the floor of the deck, grabbed the prince and princess and did the same with them. Thayet and Onua had their weapons in hand. The trainees and guards were armed and ready. The baron had drawn his sword and dagger. Numair swore so vividly that the children looked at him in awe and delight and added,
"The wind's shifting. They don't need the fog anymore."
"The dampeners?"
George asked hopefully. The maid shook his head.
"Still there. The fog laid them down. Now the spells will stick to all that the fog touched."
Within minutes the fog was gone, and the world around them was lit by a mid-morning sun. Dane gasped at the scene that lay before them. A fleet lay in the cove. 5 longboats or galleys, rowed by chained men below decks, and 7 smaller vessels, all bristling with warriors and their arms. Behind them lay 4 barges, huge flat-bottomed boats with no apparent way to move. Large wooden structures sat in the middle of each, things that were wood, rawhide, and rope knit together. Each barge carried a stock of round stone balls and a complement of barrels. Around their rims and around the weird structures were huge bags of sand.
"Such a big siege for such a little castle,"
Thayet murmured.
"Where could they have sailed from?"
"Copper Isles. They're Karthak's allies now."
"What are the big flat ones?"
Dane asked, searching the air for the storm wing she had felt. The queen raised a spyglass to her eye.
"War barges, the terror of the Karthaki navy."
She offered the glass so Dane could see clearly.
"The things in the middle are catapults. Each barge is counterbalanced with magic and ballast, so the catapults can hurl stone balls or liquid fire. They can pound the walls of a place like this to rubble in the space of a day."
"So this emperor has declared war?"
She had found the storm wing high above. He stooped, dropping onto the deck of the largest of the galleys, laughing as humans scrambled away from him.
"No Karthaki flags. This isn't official."
Dane stared at her.
"Surely that makes no difference. A flag's only a bit of cloth, after all."
"A war's not a war until an official declaration is made and the armies march under flags."
Onua pursed her mouth cynically.
"None of those men or our friends in the woods are wearing uniforms either."
"And he can do that? It's not a war till this emperor fellow says it is?"
"Or until His Majesty does."
"We can't expect any help from our navy?"
"A week ago, Scanran wolf boats hit all along the north coast. Most of the navy is up there, or on our part of the inland sea."
"How nice," Prince Roald muttered.
"Heads up, darlings. I think we're about to hear terms."
The Stormwing was taking flight again, an elegant white flag in one claw and something much smaller in the other.
"This is not good."
Numair, too, had a spyglass.
"See the red robes at the bow of each ship? And there are at least 4 yellow robes per barge."
He lowered his glass.
"A scarlet robe from the university in Karthak means you have your mastery, the same level as the Mithrin black and gold robe. University yellow robes are adepts. They brought the barges here, and their spells keep them afloat and working."
"What robe are you?"
Dane asked, watching the Stormwing's approach.
"None. Ever put one of those things on? They're hot."
"He's a black robe,"
Onua said, hands tight on her bow as she watched the monster.
"There are only 7 of them in the world."
The Stormwing was 100 feet away.
"Bows,"
Thayet said quietly. In the same movement, she and all the archers on the deck raised their weapons, sighting on the messenger. He hovered in the air before them, smirking.
"Now, is that nice?"
Dane clenched her teeth. This was the one who'd come between her and her ma. This close, she could put an arrow clean through him. The creature dropped a scroll onto the stone between Thayet and George. The queen didn't blink. It was the baron who picked it up and opened it.
"To Queen Thayet of Tortall and Baron George Cooper of Pirate Swoop, from the Lord of the Free Corsairs, Mahil Edeis, greetings. By virtue of superior numbers and armament, I claim the castle, village, point, and waters of Pirate Swoop for the League of Free Corsairs. Should you prove obdurate...
Obdurate?
Dane whispered without taking her eyes from her target.
Stubborn,
supplied Numaire. George continued to read.
I shall have no choice but to reduce the castle, enslave the survivors, kill all beasts, and sow its fields with salt. You have one chance only to avoid death, capture, or enslavement. Surrender to me, the person and effects of Thyat of Tortall and her children, Prince Roald and Princess Callison. You have what remains of this day and tonight to reflect. If the three persons named are not given over to us by such time as the dawn sun will clear the horizon, we will commence bombardment by catapult. If you wish to signify acceptance of these terms, you may do so by running up three white pennants.
Calmly he rolled the message up again, and as calmly ripped it to pieces and tossed them over the wall.
Looks like O'Zorn decided what advantage he needs against the king.
There was a time when your folk were no one's errand boys,
the Baron told the Stormwing. His voice was even and almost friendly.
We don't mind helping out,
the Stormwing told him, baring his filthy teeth in a grin.
In a good cause, you understand.
He looked at Dane.
Hello, pink pig. Jeanne Bitterclaws will be here to see you soon.
He nodded at Onua.
Both of you.
Turning back to George and Thyat, he said,
Well, your answer?
The Baron spat on the stone near his feet.
Get out, before I let them make you into a pincushion.
The Stormwing's giggle was high and grating.
Oh, good. We hoped you'd say that.
He pumped his wings, pulling away from them fast. A hunter's screech split the air, and Dane's osprey friend shot past the humans. He tangled his feet in the monster's hair and hung on, pecking for the monster's eyes. The Stormwing shrieked in fury and tried to dislodge the bird from his head, but lacked the arms with which to do it.
Dane, call him off,
Numaire said, his voice suddenly tight.
I didn't call him on.
Do it,
her friend yelled. Before them, gold fire was stretching above the galleys to form a great square, anchored by the red robes below.
Come back!
Dane yelled, putting her will behind it.
It's not worth it! Come back!
Something was pounding through the air, making her ears hurt. The osprey broke off the attack and returned. Onua grabbed the children and hustled them off the deck.
I almost had his eyes!
The bird complained.
Just one more wing beat.
The gold fire in the square exploded, knocking everyone down. Like a nightmare, a horde of Stormwings blasted through, led by Jeanne Bitterclaws. They filled the air with a degree of stench and evil that had not been felt in the world in 4 centuries. To that they added pure fear in a weight that crushed the humans before them. Something huge and red in color, almost seemed to shove the gigantic flock through the gate, but it vanished. It had only been an impression. Dane was too busy trying to breathe with a full pack of terror on her mind to think about it for more than a second. She straightened, an act of will that took all the courage she had. At the palace, she'd had a taste of what a flock of the monsters could be like, but it was nothing like this. She brought up her longbow. At the edge of her vision, she saw Numaire, then the Baron, struggle to their feet. She smiled, blinked the sweat from her eyes, and loosed her arrow. The messenger had chosen to attack with the flock. As she suspected, her arrow went clean through him. Before he had struck the rocks below, she had another arrow on the string and loosed. It flew in a volley as the other humans released their arrows. Battle raged. Archers, Dane included, fired bolt after bolt, making sure of the target before they loosed. Numair made a hard decision fast. Sitting against the wall where he tripped no one up, he lifted the dampener spells. The people with lesser gifts, including those who knew fire and war spells, got to work. Onua quickly drew a protective circle around the mage to hide him from the storm wings. Dane fought two wars. Her animal friends wanted to rescue her, but she refused to let them. She soon learned that keeping her will on so many species, in the woods, the castle, and the air, was impossible. Pain shot through her head. Twice she lost control of the gulls and ospreys. With triumphant screams, the birds leaped into the air to harry the storm wings. With claws and beaks they attacked, trying to drive the monsters onto the rocks or into each other. Tears rolled down Dane's cheeks. Mechanically, she fired as birds fought and died, cut by steel wings or torn to pieces by steel claws and teeth. There was no chance that her power to heal would be pulled from her in this battle as it had been in the marsh. A wound here was death on the rocks below. When the storm wings attacked, so did the land raiders, reinforced by the fleet once the fog lifted. For the rest of the morning and into the long afternoon, they tried to bring rams and ladders up to the castle walls and were driven back. Eventually, the storm wings lost interest in the battle and went to feast on the enemy dead outside the walls. They had what they wanted, no matter who won. They left the air over the deck first, not wanting to go on defending themselves against the archers and the birds. When the deck had been quiet for a while, George ordered Dane to rest. She found some shade close to Numair and sat, leaning her throbbing head on her updrawn knees.
No,
she told the animals who wanted to fight.
No, no, no.
With her last refusal, she tightened her grip until they gave in.
Look at you.
While she'd battled her friends, Miri had come to the deck with Callison and one of the maids. All three carried laden trays and wineskins. The fisher girl came to Dane, frowning.
Your skin's a nice lobster red. You landlubbers don't think about reflected glare.
She rubbed a cool salve into Dane's hot face and arms.
Callie, where's the tonic?
The princess filled a tankard from her wineskin and handed it over.
Drink, or you'll be sick.
Miri put the tankard to Dane's lips. She took a gulp and choked. It was tomato juice laden with salt and other things.
Drink it all.
Goddess, that's nasty.
She had the Smith God's own headache. Her hands throbbed and her fingers refused to close. The muscles of both arms were screaming. She had never shot so much in her life.
Nasty it may be, but it'll keep you from collapsing on us. Have some more. Maud brewed it up special for you. Only think how her feelings would be hurt if you refused it.
She sat up, wincing as her head pounded. Maud? The old woman in charge of the nursery.
That's right. She's a healer, isn't she?
From her cradle, Dane had been taught to do as a healer said. She drew a deep breath and drank what was in the tankard as fast as possible. For a moment, her stomach surged and her head screamed. Then most of the pain and sickness were gone.
Goddess bless all healers.
Even her hands had improved a little. She sat up, and the maid gave her a bowl of stew and a roll. Dane took them and began to eat as Miri and the servant looked at Numair.
Should you even be out here?
She asked Callie.
Onua put a protective circle around this place,
Miri said over her shoulder. Dane smiled at Callie, then looked at Miri.
How's it going?
Not bad.
That came from Numair. He sat with his head tilted back against the wall, his eyes closed, his face pouring sweat. Pillows had been put around his sides to make him comfortable. Someone, a red-headed 6-year-old, Dane suspected, had tucked his prize stuffed bear under one of the mage's big hands.
They can't breach the walls. Can't even get near them. They're having a horrible time with the archers. We're holding our own.
Can you drink or eat?
Callie asked.
Maud says you should if it won't distract you from the spells.
He nodded. The girl fetched a cup of water from a nearby barrel and held it to his lips. He drank without opening his eyes.
How are you doing, Your Highness?
Please don't call me that.
The girl's voice cracked.
It's 'cause of me being a princess that all this is happening. It's my fault and I hate it.
Dane rolled to her knees and went to the child.
Here now, stop that,
she said, patting Callie's shoulder. The girl turned and buried her head in Dane's shirt. She was crying and fighting hard to keep from making any sound.
She's only 8,
Dane thought sadly.
You got it all wrong, sweetling. Those men would do this no matter who they're after. They could have asked for Numair here, who's in trouble in that Karthak place, or Sarge, that's a runaway slave. It isn't 'cause of you, or Rold, or anybody. You're just the excuse. If you must blame somebody, blame them Karthax.
Karthakis,
Numair corrected. He was smiling a little.
Dane's right, Callison. The person who commits an action is the one responsible for it, not the people he commits the action upon.
But they said it was 'cause of Mama and Rold and me.
Callie blew her nose and wiped her face.
So they would.
Dane burned with fury. The riders, the guards, even she had put herself in spots where a fight might sometimes be the only answer. They all knew the risks. But to twist a little girl's mind so she blamed herself for the fight, that was horrible.
Evil people say evil things to make good people cry and doubt. Don't let them get that hold on you. It's because they're too cheap to buy food. They'd rather steal it if they can. That's really what it's about.
Callison!
Maud was at the stair, calling.
I need you below. There's healing to be done.
Callie sniffed and wiped her face again.
Coming.
Dane watched her go.
But she's only a child.
That child is a strong natural healer.
Numair hadn't once opened his eyes.
She's partly untrained still, but Maud can talk her through whatever has to be done. How are you managing?
Dane looked at him warily.
What do you mean?
I mean, your friends out there must be dying to go after the raiders, and I definitely recall you saying you won't let them fight. The birds got away from you this morning, didn't they?
Dane clenched her fists and immediately regretted it.
I'm all right.
Liar.
He said it almost with amusement.
Is it a strain?
The air was singing to her.
What?
She got to her feet. Where was it coming from?
Numair, do you hear it?
Hear what?
It was like the griffins, only different. A singing coming from the north, low and close. It filled her eyes and ears and beat against the sore palms of her hands. Onua was with George and Captain Josua, trying to talk Thayet into going below, when she felt her circle of protection on the deck evaporate.
Down!
She pushed the queen to the floor. George and Josua had their swords out as the source of the music came thundering up from below to surge over their heads. Numair was on his feet instantly, his watch over the castle shattered. The dragon shrieked its fury and broke away to head out to sea. She turned and came back. Everyone was on the floor but Dane. She stood on the wall, scant inches between her toes and empty air, awed by the glory before her. Scarlet wings and scales glittered like rubies along that long and graceful form. The wings, fashioned like a bat's, were huge, delicate structures of deep red, lit from within by silver bones. As the dragon passed inches over her head, almost knocking her onto the deck, She could see orange and yellow scales decorating the great creature's belly. Like the storm wings, her claws and teeth were silver, but not the hard silver of metal. Her song almost deafened the girl. She struggled to force the notes into a form she could understand until she heard,
"Kidnappers! Filthy kidnappers! Rend them! Take the raven-haired one to a cage on the ships!"
Dane shook her aching head. What was she hearing? The dragon came in low and almost seized Thyat before having to reverse her flight.
"Bring me here? You will send me home with your human tricks!"
The girl closed her eyes.
"What tricks?"
she shouted with her magic as loudly as she could. Tahoy yelped. Below, the horses screamed, their delicate ears in pain. The dragon came in again and yanked the sword from Josua's fist. The man was flung to the stone, where he lay stunned.
"Stop! Stop! What kidnappers? What lies?"
The dragon was coming again.
"Send me home! I demand it!"
Numair threw fire at her, fire that settled on her like a cloak, and blew away. The long head twisted around to focus on him.
"Human mage, you will pay for stealing me!"
Dane threw herself at Numair and knocked him down. The long shadow fell over them and stayed. The stone beneath them quivered. Somewhere distant, a number of people screamed. The deck was 60 feet across. The dragon had taken 20 of those feet for her person, 4 feet to hind legs, and cluttered a good 20 feet more with her tail and wings. Everyone but Dane and Numair, between her forepaws, was pressed to the wall or had made it to the stairs. Dane jumped to her feet and raised her hands.
"I think I have the knack of it now. Or please, goddess, I hope I do."
Putting her hands on that scarlet breast, she called,
"Listen, wing sister."
Information flooded into her mind as the dragon let out an ear-rending screech. Dane's nose began to bleed. The intensity of her contact with the dragon's mind had overloaded her body's limits.
"Who speaks?"
Dane drew a breath, forcing her heart and lungs to slow down.
"Me. Joking."
Disbelief was loud in the dragon's mind and in hers.
"No joke. What did they tell you? The red robes on the ships?"
Why did she feel as if she were healing something? A quick look inside showed her copper fire streaming through her hands, being pulled out of her and into the dragon. When she tugged, she realized she couldn't yank away. Her palms were locked against the dragon's scales. The dragon was hesitant now.
They say, Raven-haired One and her kit stole me from home, brought me here to destroy boats.
Can't you smell a lie?
She was getting a sense of the mind behind the huge cat-like eyes. This dragon was not much older than a human of Miri's age, say, and very frightened, panic-stricken, in fact.
"Only smell on red robes was eaters."
The storm wings were vivid in the dragon's mind.
"They brought you the robes. They brought you with the eaters."
"Do not understand."
The dragon was confused and scared. She was quivering under Dane's hands.
"Tired, sick, little one."
Dane felt the dragon's hide ripple. It was like a convulsion, or a contraction, Ma's daughter realized.
"You're having a baby!"
Suddenly, the dragon's mind filled with a hot excitement that shattered Dane's magical hearing. Her hands dropped free of the dragon, and she clapped them to her ears. The dragon screeched and launched herself into the air. Before Dane realized she was leaving, she had gone, flying north along the cliffs. Her image blurred, then vanished.
She can do magic,
the girl realized with awe. Numair got to his feet and jerked her into his arms.
You little idiot,
he whispered, hugging her so tightly she squeaked.
She was in labor and on her way home,
Dane told him, feeling mashed.
They opened the gate nearby and it pulled her in. I think it killed her baby. Maybe it would have killed her, but it was just what you said. The wild magic was just sucked right out of me, so I think she's healing. And she's been educated, Numair, from books. Her mind, it's all organized, like you've been after me to do.
Around them, the others were coming forward. In Josua's and the guard's eyes, she saw an emotion that looked like fear. Someone ran up to the deck. Farrant.
Master Numair, the healers are asking if something's wrong. If you don't shield them now, we'll lose Sarge.
Oh, no,
Thiet whispered. Numair released Dane and sat against the wall once more. His eyes closed, and the quality of air around him changed. Dane decided she might like to sit down for a while herself. Her legs folded before she told them to, and she never remembered hitting the ground. Ten. Listening far enough. Someone had carried her below and put her on a cot in what she realized was the Baron's study. Tahoy lay nearby, worried. A couple of the bats clung discreetly to the hangings. The osprey, missing an eye but miraculously alive, sat on the perch, letting Onua feed him raw fish. Dane sat up. Her head pounded worse than ever, and she felt her stomach heave.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Onua got a basin to her just in time.
What's the matter?
She asked when Dane finished vomiting.
Was it the dragon?
No. How long have I been out?
Not too long. It's just after sunset.
Looking at her shirt, Dane saw it was a gory mess.
What happened?
You had a nosebleed. What's wrong with your head? Can you tell?
Onua smoothed her hair.
It's important. You're important.
They knew she was awake, and their struggle to get free increased. She didn't even know she'd stopped answering the Khmer until coolness entered her veins, driving back the hot fire of the headache. She opened her eyes. Callie held one of her hands, Tom another. The coolness had been theirs.
Hello,
she said. Her voice sounded like a rusty gate.
Thank you.
You're wearing yourself out.
Maud stood behind the children, looking stern.
You have to let some spells go. I know your magic is different, but your body's just like anybody else's. You're doing too much. Release some of your spells, or we can't answer for the consequences.
Dane looked at Onua as the old woman steered Callie and Tom out.
Easy for her to say,
she muttered when the door was safely closed. Onua brought over a tray of food and put it on the table beside her cot.
Eat. What magic do you have going, anyway?
Hot cakes drenched in butter and syrup, fruit juice, hot cocoa. The sugar cleared her head as she ate.
I can't let them fight,
she said.